All right, so welcome everybody. Today's session, simply put, Round Things Roll. And our hope today is to get you really thinking about how we can build upon children's curiosity and excite them with some nice learning opportunities in just simple, playful ways and kind of take things in a slower approach. And sometimes we get caught up in writing these lesson plans and making them so intricate, and you know, it can take a lot of effort and it can be tedious at times. And I think sometimes that can take us away from when children are just playing in the classroom or out on the playground, some of those amazing learning opportunities that we can take hold of and extend with children. So let's get started. My name is Cynthia Parker. Happy to be with you here today. For those of you who logged in a little just after one, I'm up in Boston, Massachusetts. I was asking people to share where they're from and what their weather is like today. And we're having a nor'easter up here, so it's kind of a very chilly, stay home kind of day. And a couple people, we had San Diego and Florida, which are just beautiful places to be right now this month. So thank you for sharing. And we have a lot of people joining today, so wonderful. Myself, I have been in the early childhood field for over 28 years now, and you know, played a lot of different roles, which have been exciting. I've been in the classroom as a teacher. I have been in leadership roles within early childhood programs. I've worked with different research teams and other teams on professional development and coaching. And so it's been a really great experience, and I just love bringing, you know, my excitement for early childhood learning and my experience to all of you. But I always feel that I can still learn more. And in these sessions or any other professional development session, it's always wonderful to hear from the people attending, because you all have great ideas that, you know, together we can build some amazing things. We're going to first talk about 21st century thinking skills and how early childhood and education in general has changed over the years. We're going to use balls just to think about ways to engage children in rich learning experience. And the information we share today can then apply to, you know, so many other elements in which children are engaged in your classroom. But we're going to use balls as a fun and simple way to, you know, talk about this level of engagement. And we're going to use productive questions as ways to provoke children's thinking. All right. So my first question, a little riddle for you here. Riddle me this. I am an odd number. Take away one letter and I am even. You have an answer to that little riddle. You can type it in our Q&A. See what people say. I am an odd number. Take away one letter and I am even. Any ideas from people out there? Ah, Gabriella says seven. And you are correct. So think of the word seven, which is an odd number. Take away that S from seven. You are left with the word even. Good job. All right, here's another one. How many triangles are there in this image right here? How many triangles can you see in this one image? When you have an answer again, I've got 10. A couple people say 10. Any others? Oh, we've got 11. We've got 13. Somebody else said 11. The answer is 13, and let me show you how. So we first have the large triangle that you see. That is the outline of the whole image in of itself. So there's one. And from there, we have two. Where we have, oh, yep, two, the yellow triangle, three, the blue triangle. And I'm going to actually back check for this for 1 second. So the outer triangle is one. Then you can hardly see my gray line didn't transfer over correctly. The top triangle, that's two. Yellow is 3. Blue makes 4. And then we're going to shade in each triangle within. So 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. So there are 13 triangles in this image here. So why am I asking you these silly questions? Well, because today's education is changing from the way education, you know, was 20 years ago, 30 years ago. Our world is changing. So, you know, gone are the days where there was mostly rote instruction, where a teacher came up with the entire unit and just gave that information to students, telling them what to learn, how to learn it, into a world where we're focusing on a lot more collaborative learning, where children are getting together and working on projects together, using more of an algebraic thought approach to solving problems and, you know, discovering new ideas together. And that's seen in the workplace too. You know, gone are the days where you might just have that traditional hierarchy within your workplace, and into a more collaborative approach where, you know, you have more of that think tank going on and people are working together in order to, you know, enter a new marketplace and come up with new ideas. Technology is a huge part of both school and work. Of these 21st century thinking skills that I have here, these are the skills that students need to prepare for work in today's society. Of these, there are 4 called the 4 C's that we really want to emphasize in early childhood. And that's critical thinking. So again, having them problem solve something. You guys just had to really think about those 2 questions that I asked you. You had to be creative in order to find a solution to the problem. We didn't get to collaborate today, but collaboration is also really important as part of, you know, children's learning, getting along with other people, not only for just the normal, you know, we should get along with other people, but because the workforce and later on in education is going to require students to really work together in order to move forward in the world. And then communication. You have to be able to communicate effectively. Again, people aren't working in silos. People are working constructively together. So when we think of these skills in the early childhood classroom, and we apply them to the lessons that we are preparing for children and the way we're provoking their thinking and really responding also to their interests and their curiosities, these are the skills that are going to really take them far. Prepare them for elementary school. Prepare them for work and beyond. Okay, so we're going to keep these 4 C's in mind as we go throughout this session today. All right. Now, how do we support those 4 C's in the 21st century thinking skills in young children? The best way is through play. Now, we've heard that, Piaget, learning through play. It's in all of the books. You know, then when we started off going to our early childhood classes and we took child growth and development, we are told that children learn through play. Yet, there's still been an effect where I think elementary school has been pulled down into early childhood, and we've gone a little for a while where we are, again, trying to feed children information, provide them with worksheets with right or wrong answers, you know, as the result of completing this worksheet of, again, a lot of dictation. And we want to change that back. We want to go back to those basics and go back to what we know. And that's that children learn best through play, which is a flexible and hands-on approach to learning. That means they're getting involved. They're solving the problems themselves. You know, they're responding to their curiosities and able to take the ideas in their minds, the things that they're interested in, and dig deeper. And if we have a hands-on approach to learning, here are the results. Children are going to have better retention for whatever it is they're learning within that experience or within your classroom. They're going to have higher engagement. So children are going to be participating more. And that's what we want. We want to engage all children in the learning process. Again, we're going to support them in being critical thinkers. because we're not going to give them the answers. We're going to give them the opportunities to try things out, the opportunities to fail, the opportunity to restructure what they're trying to do and try it again and come up with a solution that works. Play also supports various learning styles. So the children who need to be moving and touching things all the time might be really important for some children to really access information. Others need to hear things. And so making sure that, you know, they're hearing each other, that we're offering stories to read. Others need something very visual. And so they need to be able to look at a book or look at the materials and problem solve something. And it also incorporates all learning domains. So again, learning doesn't happen in isolation. We don't just have a science activity for science and a literacy activity for literacy. But when children are engaging in play, they're learning within multiple learning domains. So, you know, think about the child who's digging in the sandbox. All right. There's science there as they figure out that they can add some water and just enough water will make that sand stick. They can put it into a sand bucket, flip it over and engineer and design. They're working on social skills as they have other children in the sandbox and they are looking for specific tools and they have to take turns. So they have to negotiate how to get a particular shovel that they want. They're working on language skills as you as the educator are sitting with them and talking to them and asking them, tell me about what you're doing. Oh no, why did it fall down? Or, you know, what are we going to do in order to create a taller, you know, sand tower? What can we do? How are we going to design windows? You know, and they're going to share their ideas with you and learn new vocabulary and share what they, you know, what language they do have. So again, learning is going to happen throughout all the different learning domains. Side by, I always like to throw my grandkids in my can. That is my grandson there who is a little bit of a superhero and my granddaughter down in the corner there who is playing with some water a couple weeks ago, she and I. So just have to throw that in there and give them a little shout out. All right, so today I picked balls. I mean, kids love balls. You know, they have balls that we give for infants. You know, they have little hard ones that make sounds. We have the big squishy soft ones. As children get older, they start to use different types of balls for different activities. So they might have a soccer ball. They might begin to start playing baseball or football. They might like little ping pongs because they bounce, or those mega super balls that you put the quarters in the machine at the grocery store and they can bounce everywhere and get all over the place and then roll under your couch and you don't find them for days. But bottom line is, this is a toy that crosses all age spans and children love. They will find a way to play with it and explore with it. And it's easy to step back and say, just go play with the ball. Whew, okay. Have fun. And that's okay. Children should be able to play and explore on their own and not always be intruded upon by us as educators. But as we do engage with children in their play, there are just ways that we can enhance what they're doing a little bit more and scaffold their learning. So today I really want to think about the idea of just the simple toy of a ball. And I want to use a science lens to look a little bit more at all the learning possibilities for young children. So let's start off with this image here. And imagine this was a shelf in your classroom. So again, in the Q&A box, go ahead in and just kind of write down that if you were a child, what might be the first thing you observe about these balls? What might children say? What might they do? What might they notice? Again, go ahead and just type those into the chat box. Let's see. Some people are noticing the and the sizes. Yeah, those are very dramatic here. You can see some really small balls, the little marbles, and of course the giant beach ball. What else might children notice? Or what might they do to kind of explore and identify different characteristics of these balls? We have texture. Oh, that's a good one. The texture of that football is going to be a lot more rough than the texture of that beach ball, which is nice and smooth. Other people, let's see, we have shape. For the most part, these are all round, except we do have that football that has different shape there. We also have some toilet, I don't know if they're toilet paper rolls or paper towel rolls that have a circular part to them, but again, also are cylindrical. So they're much longer, or the rings that are narrow, but are still in the shape of a circle. Let's see if other people say balls of different sizes. Oh, the strength of grip they will need to hold. What a cool question or a cool observation. Yeah, I mean, so children can go in there, take their hand, their little hand, and pick up a ping pong ball quite easily and toss it. But if they're going to pick up that baseball, they're going to notice the weight is a little bit more. So they're going to have to use a stronger grip for that. Most likely their little hands are not going to fit around that football. They're going to need two hands to pick that up and then figure out how to navigate throwing that, because that shape is going to be different in trying to throw it. They can't just push it out the way they might one of the other balls. Nice. We've got some cool observations here. I like it. You can also notice we've got some cotton balls in that middle shelf. So they have like look. But once we start exploring, we might notice that they are quite different from a ball. And in the bottom corner, we have some, it looks like rocks. So again, some rocks you might look at and say, hey, it's a circular rock, but does it function the same way as some of those other round objects? We'd have to find out through some different experiments. All right, so I asked you that because I always want to start off slow with experiences. Let's just ask kids, what do you notice? Okay, let them get to know the materials that they're playing with. Again, the color, the sizes, the textures, the way they need to hold it, what it's used for. Starting off just really simple and getting their attention to focus in on the materials, because from there, a number of curiosities are going to build. We as the educators can then use various types of questions to build upon what we notice them showing an interest in. And that might be behaviors that we see them engage, words that they say or questions that they ask. But again, we can use questions to then build upon all of that and then allow that to become the curriculum in your classroom and not always be tied to a written curriculum. And again, there's ways to balance that. But when I'm talking about open-ended questions, just to be clear, I'm not talking about questions where the answer is yes or no, or their answer is rote. So, you know, when I'm asking, you know, a question to a child, I'll have teachers go, oh, I asked lots and lots of questions. And you can sit in their circle time and you might say, you know, oh, is this a circle? Yes. You know, hold up a football. Is this a circle? No. Well, what shape is this? This is, you know, a square. You know, those are answers that kind of just check in to see if children are aware, to assess some of their knowledge already, you know, with some basic facts. So these are five types of questions that are also known as productive questions. There's a great article out there called The Right Question at the Right Time that uses these five questions as a way to really engage children in their learning. The first is attention focusing questions. And that's just calling to attention, you know, children noticing specific things. Hey, did you notice that plane flying in the sky? You know, so when children hear that type of question, they're not necessarily going to answer only yes or no, but they're going to look and they're going to try and find, what do you mean you want me to see that question, that airplane in the sky? A couple of people have their hands raised. I want to make sure I'm not forgetting about you. Let me put up my participants here for a second. Pauline and Rosemary, I'm going to unmute you for a second. Do you guys have questions?
Not at the moment.
Okay, your hand was raised. I want to make sure I wasn't ignoring
you. Oh, it must have been an accident. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Don't worry.
I'm sorry.
No problem. Please don't apologize. All right, I'm just going to put you guys back on mute there. All right. So that's an attention focusing question. So it engages the children right away. All right. It makes them look around, or it makes them, you know, act in a way to explore what you're calling attention to. There's also measuring and counting questions. And that might be something, you know, along the lines of, well, how much ice cream can I fit in this bowl? Okay. So we're going to count the scoops to figure that out. All right. I can ask children, you know, how many fingers am I holding up? Four, one, two, three, four. But when we're engaging in play and we can get them to actually really do the work and solve the problem, like, well, you know, we all want to have, you know, a cookie. So we have to figure out how many cookies do we have? How many cookies can everybody get? And get children doing the work. Comparison questions brings them into that really important practice also of observing and describing. That's an important science practice where they're really looking at the details between different materials so they can figure out how things work, why things happen. There's action questions where we kind of give children that little bit of a nudge to try something out. Like, what would happen if we mix the vinegar and, you know, baking soda together? In order for children to answer that question, they have to do something. They have to go ahead and mix those materials together. Or a problem posting question where we don't necessarily tell children what to do, but we kind of start leading them on the way of their own investigation. Something like, let's see, what am I going to, you know, how can we get that block tower to be solid and not be knocked down by this car we're rolling at it? What can we do to make a really solid block tower? You know, so I'm going to give them an idea. They probably know what materials to possibly use. And then they're going to go ahead and set up their own investigation. All right. So these are five questions to remember. And then, you know, you could print these out, put them on a little post-it note, stick them on your cabinet. And sometimes it's nice just to kind of look at them and like pause for a minute and think, what is it I'm about to ask questions? Because those yes, no questions, those answers with, you know, rote answers, those questions, you know, can just come out so easily and naturally for us because we are trying to get so much crammed in an activity. But when we can slow it down and give ourselves more time to ask just the right question and get children to engage in the answers, that's a richer and deeper experience. And again, they're going to support all those 21st century thinking skills. So when we think of children and playing with balls, let's think of some of the really cool questions that we might be able to explore with them that could be a really neat learning opportunity. So that could be something as simple as, this ball doesn't seem to roll. So kind of, again, that attention focusing question, like, oh, this one doesn't roll. I'm gonna draw you in. And now children are gonna try it out, try rolling it and start to try and figure out, well, why isn't it rolling? And then we can scaffold in terms of, wow, how does the shape of something help it move? We can start to think about, why do you think this ball bounces and this one doesn't? There are some balls that are just, you know, kids love them, that super bouncy ball. You know, my grandson will go around the house and be like, I'm looking for the ball, and I'll hand him different balls. He's like, no, I want the one that bounces. So he knows there's a particular ball that bounces, but to be able to like dig into, well, why is it that this one bounces and this one doesn't? We can think about, well, what other things roll? And this can just explode into a variety of learning opportunities when children start noticing, you know, other materials besides a ball that rolls. Like, again, a tube might roll. And why is that? An egg isn't circle, but that will roll. There's tires on cars. Cars have tires that roll, and so do trains, and so do trucks, which is a whole other interest of children. So now we're making these connections between one thing they're very interested in, which again could be a different type of ball, to other things that have same characteristics, this idea that round things roll. And we can build that into something else they're interested in, which might be cars, trucks, and transportation. We could think about how much force do we need to roll the ball back and forth to one another? I love it when, you know, little infants and toddlers, they start to roll the ball and they give it this little bit of tap. We can get them to really start getting really physical and engaged with the ball and using this idea of force to really get the ball from me to you and vice versa. We have all these balls. It's time to clean up. What bag is going to be big enough to hold all of these balls? That's some really cool math. I mean, we can't just use any old bag. They're not going to fit into any bag. We need just the right size bag to be able to carry back into the classroom. Oh, how about this? Did you hear the loud noise when you dropped it? Think about different balls. You don't want children, you know, dropping golf balls all around the classroom because you're going to hear like that pop, pop, pop. And same with the ping pong balls, the loud noise. So a lot of times inside, you're going to give kids a really soft ball. But again, what a cool investigation is they're noticing the characteristics of the balls in terms of some of them are soft, some of them are hard. Which ones are making the loud sound? The ones that are hard, the ones that are soft. We can think about other ways to move that ball. And we can connect into sports. Can you kick the ball all the way to the net? So again, we're bringing this idea of force in and then how much effort they can make. And again, this physical interaction they're having with the ball so that they have to get it from their spot all the way over to that net. We could also think about, well, oh, actually I repeated which ball is big. I thought I changed that. Sorry about that. Let's see. Did you notice that this ball is in a circle? Again, the football is that one ball that is in a circle, or it may not look like a circle if it's partly deflated. So, wow, okay, well, that one's not a circle. Maybe that's why it's not rolling, and start really thinking about shape and how shape affects the way things move. Well, what might happen if we drop the ball in the puddle? Really, what child doesn't like to explore a puddle? You know, we can throw pebbles into a puddle, but we have all these different types of balls. We're noticing how heavy they are, how big they are. Children often automatically be like, the big one's going to cause a big splash. But that's not true. You try and throw a beach ball into a puddle versus a baseball, you're going to get a lot bigger of a splash with that baseball. And having children figure out why that is. Which ball is able to knock over that block tower? Again, we build this really cool tower. We want this wall and, demolition. So much fun for kids. Let's go with it. Let's make it a learning opportunity and tell them, instead of telling them, let's not do that. But let's go ahead and knock it over. But can you build one that doesn't knock over? Which ball is going to be best to knock it over with? Is it going to be the beach ball or is it going to be the soccer ball? And why is that? Or which ball fits into which hole? There are a lot of toys now that come with balls and we put the ball in and it rolls back and forth or is part of a shape sorter, whatever it might be. But that idea of scale, proportion, and quantity and getting children to figure out there are certain balls that work with this toy. You know, I need marbles for the marble run because they're really small tubes. But I need, balls that are, maybe about 3 inches big that work best with this other particular toy. Because the shape of the hole and the shape of the tunnels are that much bigger. So we have all these cool questions that we could just bring about over the course of weeks with children as they're playing with balls. Again, notice what they're doing. Are they bouncing it? Are they banging on something and making a sound? Are they rolling it into something? Are they throwing it up in the air? Are they tossing it back and forth? Watch what children are doing. Observe them. Because that's telling you what they're curious about. And then we can bring that learning opportunity in again with one of these five productive questions, which can lead to some really cool science investigations. So here's one way of looking at all of these questions that might come up. And again, we want to have a balance of these spontaneous learning opportunities, but also bringing them back into the classroom, into maybe some planned learning experiences. And where might this take you? Here's a quick web. Now this book could go forever because, I just only have so much room on my screen for ideas about any type of learning experience. But if we notice children are really interested in the fact that, wow, all these round things are rolling and we've got things rolling all over the classroom, that could branch us off into so many other potential learning opportunities. So you can see on the bottom right, I have characteristics of the ball. Again, we can learn with math and which one's bigger, which one's smaller. We can dissect the ball. Have we ever thought just to cut open a bunch of the balls to figure out what's inside them? Do the things that have stuff inside them bounce more? Or what are they made up of? Have you ever cut open a baseball? Why is it so heavy? We can think about all the different sports that children like to engage in, whether it's baseball or soccer or just kickball in general, and think about the different types of balls that work for different types of sports and why we use particular types of balls. Why don't we use the baseball for soccer? Why don't we use a soccer ball for baseball? And what other tools that we need for that sport? So we can go around this idea of structure and function, why the ball is so important. Well, why are the other tools that we have in a particular sport so important? You know, why do we have shin guards? Why do we have a net? You know, what's its purpose? Balls can just start a great conversation about shapes. So again, just for our younger children, we're going to most likely call them circles, you know, and not spheres. But as kids get older, we can get into those three-dimensional shapes, you know, a circle versus a sphere. Remembering back to that picture I showed you in the beginning, you know, some of the balls, all the balls are spheres, but there were some other wooden rings and paper towel tubes that weren't spheres. We had some cylinders. Again, the rings are three-dimensional, but don't function the same way as a ball. And we can build that into lots of other types of shapes. And because children are so interested in the rolling, well, what is it about the shape that allows it to roll? And if it doesn't roll, how does it move? So we can get into the idea of pushing and pulling objects, as well as the fact that some things roll. A square object's going to slide. A round object's going to roll. We can get into this idea of ramps and inclines as children roll things up and down. You know, they'll find stairs and they'll find ramps, or they'll make ramps with cardboard boxes or blocks in the block area. And again, they'll probably start digging out some cars and trucks because those roll too. And again, they roll because round things roll and they have wheels. So we can start digging into transportation and the technology behind that. And even branch out beyond that into those things that don't have wheels. Well, cars and trucks move because they have wheels and the round things roll. But boats and planes are different. And why is that? You know, so all starting with this really simple idea that children love balls. And through their exploration, they're going to be able to answer a lot of different questions and have a lot of different curiosities about them. We can build upon that into a huge array of learning opportunities that can extend beyond just the fact that we're playing with a bunch of different types of balls here. We can grow that and extend that learning and scaffold that learning. All right, let's see here. I just want to show you a couple ways where playing with balls and exploring the fact that round things roll may look in your classroom. So up in the top left, well, this idea that round things roll can go beyond just the ball. So we have some pumpkins and gourds, you know, and they're in different shapes. And so you see here an infant just exploring the different shapes. And yeah, that's my granddaughter. But, you know, just exploring how different things move. She's picking them up. She's looking at it. Now, she might not figure out exactly the fact that round things move. And again, as the adult in this experience and with young infants and young toddlers, we're going to model that. Oh, wow, look how that moved. That one rolled. That's a funny shape. That one's not round. Let's see if that moves the same way. In the top middle, you see kids see this little boy with a car. Kids love the transportation and zooming them across the floor. So again, we can go beyond the idea of that it's just a car and, you know, they're creating dramatically in an experience, which is all fun and all good, but we can talk a little bit more about, wow, that car went really fast down that ramp. Why is that? What is it about the car that moves so fast? What is it about the ramp? In the top right, we have this idea of force. Again, whether we're rolling the ball to knock down bowling pins or we're kicking the ball into the net, you know, kids are playfully engaging with the science notion of force. The bottom left, again, let's go back to shapes. You know, which objects roll, which objects slide? We can set up a simple investigation for them. And if you actually look at the bottom right as well, that's actually a picture of what that little girl is holding in her hand is a ball. And so what that teacher is doing is going throughout a neighborhood that she took the children on a neighborhood walk so that the children could find inclines. And they could tell if it was incline if their round object rolled down it. Okay. And they were testing out ideas as they took a neighborhood walk. And then back to the middle bottom here, we have some, these are pretend pumpkins and a ball. And this was a while ago when my grandson was younger. This is this idea that, wow, we can kick the ball and it rolls real far. But when I kick that funny little middle pumpkin one, that doesn't really go any great distance. And why is that? You know, so You know, he veered away from that one. That one's not so much fun. I want to kick that ball and see. All right. So he's learning something about the physical properties of materials and how they function and how force can connect with that. We can also build upon this, you know, again, into the idea that round things roll. Let's think about how far they roll. Let's think about, you know, an art experience that connects together with them. And we can use this idea of children loving to roll objects, whether it's cars or it's balls, down this ramp and explore the tracks that they make or the colors, how they form on the paper or how they mix on the paper. So again, when I was mentioning earlier that learning happens across multiple domains and experiences, you can see we have art and science happening in the first. We have some really great science and math happening in that middle one as children are being, you know, exposed to numbers in this idea of distance and measuring and documenting. And again, as children in the far right one, they're doing their science as they investigate what objects roll, but there's also language because now they're going to help figure out, is it round? Is it a cylinder? Is it a square? What is it about this particular object? What are the characteristics that they can notice? That's rich language vocabulary happening there. So again, it's all coming together in these, you know, simple experiences that can stem from a toy as simple as a ball. Now, remember, at any point in time, as you're watching children play, you're making note to say, what really rich question can I ask them? How can I extend this learning? But it's also a great time to document some of their behavior too. So as young children are playing with the different balls and you just notice what they're interested about, what they did, and document that in whatever documentation tool you have. So whether you have the eye care system itself or another type of documentation system, grab that photo, write a little note about you know, what a child is actually doing during those play times. And then as you build that documentation over time, you can have them a really nice story that tells how children are learning. For this example about force. So maybe he's just pushing the car today, but maybe tomorrow he's building ramps and pushing cars up ramps. And he's really exploring how much force it takes to get that car to roll up the ramp. Or maybe he's starting to build that tower and realize, wow, how much force do I need to take this car and knock down that tower? Or maybe he's really getting the concept of weight. So when he goes out to the playground, he can navigate through a bunch of different balls and figure out what's the best ball for me to use to try and get it up into that basketball net, or that I can kick the farthest, or that I can hit the best with my baseball. And these little pictures, again, like I said, tell a story. And when we slow down and see what children are curious about, and then we can kind of pull from it that learning experience, it's going to tell us what we can do to further their learning, but also show growth over time. So that is our time for today. For those of you who have questions about eye care, if you are either new to eye care or interested in eye care, here's our contact information in which you can reach out and learn more. In regards to the lesson today, I hope you enjoyed it and gave you just a different lens on how we can build off of children's curiosities in very simple ways and not have to worry always about getting really elaborate, but that opportunities are happening all the time that we can build upon. So with that, I thank you all for joining, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.